to situation here at what is the foremost venue in Cork, certainly I would say, very important venue. Thank you for inviting me down. I have some poems here, twice. And the first one is really started off with two poems, but I put the two together called Endgame. And again, like all poets, sometimes you are overtaken by events. The name of the first poem is The Hunt for Radovan Karadzic. And of course, Radovan Karadzic was handed over by Serbs over a year ago. Cynics say it had more to do with Serbia's desire to join the European Union rather than give up their beloved Radovan, because he is held in high esteem. He's on in Serbia. He's on for being tried in the war crimes tribunal. So this was written when he was on the run. Or really, I don't suppose he was on the run so much as being hidden. I mentioned that he's also a poet. But that should put an end to, you know, any idea that we're all nice people. And I read some of his poetry. It's good. Some of it is quite good. And, you know, we have to say that. I'm not a fan of his. But, you know, it just shows that the most awful people can write fairly okay poetry. In these mountains where his mother lives, where his brother Serbs have lived for centuries, wrapped in their ancient bitternesses, snow keeps hold on everything. Its hard white paws resisting to the end whatever warmth a winter sun can spread. Its icy shroud unmocked by man's footprints. Here they keep him, folded in their hate, our criminal, their poet. These roofs, where ice drips down, but slowly, only to freeze up again in dead of night. This town, where foreigner was never welcome. Streets that take the print of NATO boots unwillingly, and soon erase them. Watches from its casements, this young soldiery that stands uncertain in its alleyways and slouches on its corners, smoking, rifles sloped, like Christmas ties, not sure of what to do, or if it will be done, or when to do it. Tight-lipped townsfolk grip their missiles close against their chests and step out carefully to church. Ignore the armored cars. Give no look or sign or salutation, their breath solidifying in contempt. They know what these young boys are made of, what it is that they can do, and everything they can't. Now that they're here and on the ground and not so high above the clouds, you couldn't reach them with a missile, hear them, even see them till their bombs came raining down. But no offense, we understand. The art of war moves on, develops like all ours, and we have clasped into us this cold Sunday morning here in Palais. Now he's with his own again, who wrote of death, the spider, and the wolf, who dreamed for us our greater Serbia, who put down pen and took up sword, decided war would be the continuation of his poetry by other means, and at whatever cost. And at whatever cost, we will defend him. Your criminal, our poet. The other poet is about no president or civil leader can reach his wars without good generals, or good in the sense of, you know, being successful in their way. And Mladko Radic is still on Mladic is still on the run. He hasn't been tracked down. He's somewhere in Serbia. And I'm sure everybody in Serbia knows where he is, but he hasn't been handed over yet. He was Karadzic's man. Some tiny village high up in the hills, where winding streets are difficult and dark for NATO personnel to penetrate. Some rural hamlet, maybe, holding fast behind its inaccessible stones. Again, Night draws its paw across its trail, and rumour whispers that he's somewhere in Belgrade, near Banovo Brdo, the family home. He lays his head each night on a different bed, in a different room, in a different house, and only where he's sure he'll wake up safe. Each move is planned, nothing left to chance. Careful with the light, he reads newspapers, smiles to see another deadline set, another ultimatum passed. He laughs to see they call him butcher, evil criminal. Almost daybreak, and the streets still dark, he packs his clothes, his medicine, and waits until a car arrives, a different one each time, to take him to a side road where another car, a different one each time, will drive him through back streets to another door, another loyal follower to guide him up another stairway to another room. Another day spent hiding and exchanging the spent cartridges of war's past with comrades faithful to the last until the night arrives to drive him out again, to drive him to another bed, and so from bed to bed until a final bed was bedded with the thousands jumbled up together in the field near Srebrenica. When I was a teacher, I retired this year, I'm 60, retired this year, great, anyway, I was 60, I retired, when I was in school, I used to try to do things about the travellers, and I'm probably a sensitive, you know, I used to get a prejudice through the class against the travellers and all sorts of things. So, it was always better to deal with, say, the problem of the blacks in southern United States, because everybody was very keen on that. But I think Gerry Adams, now I know I shouldn't say anything by any means, but Gerry Adams, I think once said, talked about long distance Christians, you know. So I was talking about over there, like a bit nearer here. So, I've been talking about Serbia, but we have our own type of cruelties here. And I suppose one of the worst is the disappeared. The people who lost people, and they don't know where they are, and you know, the news lately, people have been dug up. But there's some people who, you know, we don't know where they are after the war. And I wrote this quote. Oh, come all ye true-born Irishmen. Or should I say, oh, come all ye true-born Irishmen. And I wrote it in memory of a young man murdered by the paramilitaries in 1973. I'm thinking of Christopher McVeigh. There are other people, you know. How to tell my feelings when I think the way they took you out and killed you, dumped your body, and told no one where. How to tell my feelings when I think your family spent days and nights and months and years believing, despite everything, you turn up. That maybe you were warned to leave and not come back. Or maybe they gave you such a hiding or disfigured you in some way that you were too ashamed show yourself at home before the bruises and the shame have faded. But you would someday. You would someday. And that's the way we keep on going. Hoping, praying. And all the time, they knew you were decaying in that bog in any day. And never said a word. They could have said a word. They could have said, how to tell my feelings when I picture you tied up and beaten, taken out where no one goes, but only they, for that. And told to kneel and pray. I can't put words to things I see, imaginings of you kneeling, like the way the Nazis ordered Jews to kneel on railway platforms, with necks bent forward. Was there a moment when you pleaded, boy of 17? Your voice just broken out of childhood, unbelieving they will do this. I feel empty as the barrel of the gun that fired the bullet, shattered as the skull had cracked, the brain had shredded, lodged inside my head for many years that bullet. Now, those other people are being dug up, but still no trace of you, no bone, no leather, sinew, not a trace. Despite the messages received anonymously, with apologies for all the hurt and suffering caused. How to tell my feelings when I read about all the apologies for the hurt and suffering caused. Oh, come all ye true-born Irishmen, and listen to my song. Oh, tell me where the chandeliers that sunk you in the bog are gone. Oh, did they die for Ireland? or did any one of them become a Tolland man to lie unearthed till old Ireland, dear old Ireland, might be free? Now this. These things are very sort of, difficult to deal with, and the next poem is kind of on that thing, but people told me that there's some unintentional humour in it, which won't do any harm. It's called Lest They Forget, and I have a huge problem with continual memorials to memorial programmes to armistices, victories, anniversary programs of, the war and this sort of thing, because I do believe that it encourages people to think that war is a noble activity. Now, I know there are problems in that because, we have to honour the people who died for our country. But, there are other kinds of wars that we, and this nation state of ours seems to me to be continually slipping into that mould, which you weren't in. Maybe it can be carried with something to do with, I don't know. But I wrote this when I was 3 years old, and it changed my mind. It was written about the Japanese War Commemoration Ceremonies in August 2005, as seen on TV. It wasn't my time, I watched television. I watch too much television, I read too much, I talk too much, that sort of thing. They've had a hard time with this month, the Japs, with all their commemoration ceremonies. Of the day we knew them. I don't mean you and me, of course. I mean Western civilization. Endless TV shots of ancient women carrying flowers through parking lots, today at cemetery altars with flickering candles, and photos of the people we sent up in smoke. Then the pictures of the mushroom cloud that freed the world. It's hard for them to have it burst again each year. It's hard for us too, considering I'm a teenager. But look at what we did for them immediately afterwards, the skins and shreds, the notes we took. If ever we need to nuke again, the medical aftercare will be so much better. Then the TV ads for orange juice and tasty sour chips to not to drown in shallow water, and it's back to the land of the rising sun. And more commemorations, the ending of the war and how we won it. Pictures of the Emperor in top hat and tails, on that American destroyer signing up to end his reign as God. There's still more pictures, soldiers slaughtered and tortured, hanged and butchered, how they brutalised our boys to build that bridge on the River Kwai. Horrible, horrible. Great movie though. And now I just found out from TV how they murdered all those Chinese women long before our war began. And that's what's really great about commemoration ceremonies. They don't let things die down. It's not enough the Japanese say they're sorry for what happened. It's a bloody good thing we nuked them when we did, and they should be reminded every year of all the things we did to help them up again, despite the terrible things they did on us. Oh yeah, and all those Chinese women. Yes, we should remind them yearly, lest they forget. Otherwise, what hope for peace and love? And I can't, I've got to watch too. Television a lot. I mean, television is good. We're at home and watch TV, there's entertainment and all that. But it's full of war stuff. I mean, you can't, if it's not a documentary, it's a war film. And they're killing each other in Carnage Street and whatever, that's terrible. And all those the EastEnders, guys with knives and kitchens and all this. But I call this poem, It's That Man Again. And at last, it's feet up in the evening, now a beer, a spot of TV, and don't they deserve it, after getting through another daily dose of bullshit and belly aching. Now for a bit of personal time, a bit of me time, a splash of the goggle box. Oh no, it can't be. It's that man again. Jesus Christ. I don't mean Jesus Christ. I mean, Jesus Christ, it's that man again. Saluting, waving, embracing crowds. Just where the hell would TV be without them? Well, the so-called history channels anyway. And not be much else than the documentary stuff and all the rest, but anniversary programs they put on to make good goddamn sure we don't let sleeping Japanese or Germans lie for long, in case they might forget what evil nasty buggers they were once until we straighten them out with Hiroshima, Dresden, Nagasaki. And never an eye allowed to pass, but he is wheeled out And especially when the television schedules are tight, or when they're fresh out of cover for the gaping multitude, of which, yes, I am one. I'm sitting here, deciding whether or not to take my socks off, or get up and fetch another can of beer, and there he is! It's that man again! It's him again! Addressing crowds again, gesticulating, ranting, grimacing, or being nice, and playing with his dog. And where the hell is the remote? But no, there's no escaping him, he's everywhere. On BBC, he's masterminding ruin for everyone he doesn't deem quite kosher. On Channel 4, he's spreading out his maps. On UTV, no news, he's out to flatten Russia on a level with her steps. His endless movement singing lustily the Deutschland über alles. Yet, and yet, it always ends the very same. So only after endless plays of speckled footage and the lengthy reminiscences of gnarled faces telling how he could be charming. Yes, it always ends the same. In spite of all the crowds, the motorcades, the psychopathic henchmen, all the hands uplifted in that straight salute, it always ends the same with a great aerial shot of the Reichstag burning, and I think sucked off by now. Thank God he's gone for one night. Must be snooper on somewhere. Let me see the TV guy, the spot of football, maybe. Where's those girls that play by mansion? But, no! It can't be! It's that man again! Jesus Christ! Not only Jesus Christ, I mean. Jesus Christ, it's that man again. It's him. But wait a minute. It's only part of him. They found a bit of skull in a paper bag on a shelf in some old dusty war archive somewhere in downtown central Moscow, and they've made a program out of it. With lots of that old footage seen a thousand times before, because coloured bits they made themselves stuck in to liven up the show. Two narrow faces, same as seen before. It's true, old soldiers never die, especially those who speak German with subtitles. Then an expert in white coat comes on and tells at length that if you open up the box and find a bit of someone's head, you can be fairly sure they're fairly dead. At last, I think he's dead, at last! And now that beer, and now those desperate housewives. But no! Another sciencey chap is coming on and starts to question whether or not that bit of skull is that man's skull. It might be. Then again, it just might not. And now I'm on my knees. I'm pleading with the screen. Have mercy. Please let him be finished off one night, a single night, without the rest, with bits to let the counter television documentary! Relentlessly, the sciencey shop goes on and on and on. And then the shops of labs and microscopes. And then the screen fills up with stuff they say was never seen before. And then, yes! It's that man again! It's him again! The trench coat, the peaky hat, the toothbrush tash, the staring eyes. I'm sorry, I can't go on now. So, I think you see that kind of common thing that only goes by, you know. They do stir me up a bit. This next one is dedicated to my wife who wasn't here, which I'm glad, because she didn't like this poem very much. It's called Thank You for Holding. The fear of death, it's not really the fear of death, it's the fear of the other side of death. Not really, you know. But then there is the fear of death, and you know, waking up in the box. Like, you know, help! I'm not there really. Jesus. This is my way out of it. I've read this to my wife and told her, this is a serious point. Because statistics tell me that you'll see me out, my love. I would be much obliged if you would grant me this one last request before the lid is fastened. Please insert between my prayerful fingers and my rosary beads my mobile phone, and please make sure that for the next few days at least, yours is A, in credit, B, fully charged, C, turned on, and not D, buried at the bottom of your handbag, where it is liable to die out during your search for car keys, spectacles, credit cards, lipstick, and etc. Full list available on the quest. And if you do not hear from me during the mournful days sequential to my demise, I pray you put aside your inconsolable grief and give me a call. And please be patient. I may have some difficulty in coming to the phone. Thank you for holding. Your call could be important to me.
Here you go.
TV again, and this is from TVIVF. And if you don't know what IVF means, someone over in, this is in America today, but it's octuplets. And she's six already. And she's back behind the payments on the house and all this sort of thing. But anyone seen that TV clip they show when in vitro fertilization is in the news? There's a bunch of spermatogamous playing around our schoolyard urchins and scratching their tails and not doing harm to anyone, least of all to that enormous big blob thing to the left of your screen. That's the egg. And then from out of nowhere comes this pointy tweezer thing and snatches one of the group and whisks him up and away from his pals and shoves him into the egg. I think God gave us a remote control for moments like this. I look at the news to keep me up to speed on things like road deaths, gangland murders, tortures, sexual perversions in religious institutions. These things I can handle. They're part of the way we are. But this, nothing natural about these tweezers and the way they grab the sperm and squeeze it to make it fit, as much to say, enough with the switching around in the baby, laddie. Or did you think all this procreation paraphernalia was just for fun? Get in there and get alive. It gives me a pain in the crotch to watch it. We had a very it could only happen in Dublin. People say it could only happen in Cork. It could only happen in Dublin, where there was a march one time, the Love Ulster Parade. And it was bound to be, you know, a problem. But they were digging up the roads, men, you know, fixing up O'Connell Street, whatever. And they left loads of loose bricks, pipes, rows of barbed wire, stuff all over the place, you know. So when the fighting started, like, the ammunition was available. But that's, I'm saying that because it's in this poem, it's written about that time, and topics of poems just kind of age a bit, so sometimes you take out a section and put in a new piece, but we get time to do that. This is really about something else again, cliches. And we need cliches, you know, because we can't always be original, like I am. We need cliches to help us out, and sometimes people say the thing, you know. Oh, well, I don't know about that, you know, you're thinking, what am I going to say, what am I going to say to this? So, but they really, some of them are really overworked. And this is called The Dogs in the Street and Other Mongrel Cliches. Know what I mean? The dogs in the street knew well that the politicians were getting big brown envelopes from the land developers, and they knew that those envelopes weren't given for nothing, if you know what I mean. It's common knowledge too that dogs in the street knew that gun crime would take off like a rocket once the criminals got themselves organised, and the dogs in the street knew that once the scare about the penalty points wore off, we'd start to slaughter ourselves on the roads again like there was no tomorrow. I personally knew an Airedale, Tony, he knew for a fact, and even before it was a fact, know what I mean? That Conor Murphy should have been one of the backs to line out for Galway last year. Selector's my arse. I measured a greyhound last week, seeks in a rough in a laneway off Thames Street. Turned out to be top informed with the shortage of beds in our hospitals, long before it became really bad. But you think that anyone would listen to him? No, not at all. Even though he's a dog in the street. And everyone knows the dogs in the street know everything there is to know before anyone knows it. My own dog, Elvis, though technically not even a dog in the street, is out there a lot, keeping his nose to the ground. Know what I mean? Well, Elvis was more up to speed than the others who should have known better about that Love Ulster Parade and what's have gone up O'Connell Street, but went up the spout instead. He told me last night, Elvis, the road before he went out, but he still doesn't know why the men who were mending the road left the bricks and the pipes and the slabs from the yobos to horn. Blue bloody murder there was, says Elvis, and the language was something awful. The dogs in the street, says Elvis, knew from the start that march was going to be a recipe for disaster. Me, I never said the Irish are the brightest nation on earth, but we do have the most intelligent dog. Know what I mean? I needed a little prop for this, and I haven't got it, but it doesn't matter. I pretend that I have it, and you have to, you know what it is. Anyway, this is another one. I look at my poems, someone said they're bright poems. I think they're annoying me, but no, I mean, that's a springboard poetry too. Things that annoy you, there's always great. Hate is but, you know, things that annoy you, and this kind of thing annoys me a lot. And I won't go into it in big detail, because the title of the poem which I do is right? Let's put it in. Oh my God, not another Newgrange poem. There's some indications as to the livery Alamo. It is an ancient law enacted by Ace Dorman that every Irish poet be moved to write for competitions or to be declaimed to multitudes in a monotonous poetry voice like this while standing in the pouring rain beside the ruins. Said poets should write, nay, sing, about the silence of our ancient stones, the roundness of our ancient stones, the hardness of our ancient stones, the ancientness of our ancient stones, the stoniness of our ancient stones, and how it is they speak to us, no, read that again, at this time, miss the voice of it, and how they really speak to us across millenniums, nay, millennia. Look up words and stare at the audience. And how the soft side penetrates her passage. Clearly on the front page of the Irish Times. And how the nation yearly feels the need to rediscover prehistoric roots or prehistoric truths or both. Significant pause here. And how the nation cast its gaze back to the ancient days when men were men and ate their meat raw, dressed in off-the-shoulder furs, went clubbing for their women, had a deep relationship with stones, and knew the stars, and how to roll enormous rocks on poles, small p, up from the Boyne Valley, knew to carve in gold and complicated rings and loops with their ancient tools. Yes. And knew the mystery of life itself, and how to chart the sun, look up and close again, and how to make it strike along this passageway. Today it can be done at any occurrence of time, thanks to the board of works and saw the light to creep along the floor when it switched on like this. Of course, I just had a torch. Excuse me, sir, but could you move your foot a little? Thank you. Now behold the sacred light, the light that lit the darkness long before old Moses was a boy in breeches. That would be $25 to pay on the way out. This sacred light, each year attracts 10,000 weighty poems, replete with abstruse references to the Druids. Each poem 10,000 times the weight and more of all of Newgrange and her slabs and stones. Thank you for your time, and please don't help yourself to free souvenirs on the way out. Now, everybody has a theory of poetry. Not as fancy as saying, you know, a way to say write it and an idea what it is. It's strange, you can't write the stuff unless you have some idea in your head of what it should be like. So I feel that there shouldn't be long introductions to a poem. That you go to a picture and see you should see it as it is and not be having to weigh down too much information about it. Which is some of the paradox of I've been speaking a long time about this one. This is called Energy for the Philadelphia Wireman. And it's an interesting thing that he was, his stuff was discarded, rubbish stuff that was like old umbrellas, metal stuff that was twisted into shapes and all that. And it's very famous now all over the world, the Philadelphia Wireman stuff. But no one knows who he is, because the stuff was cleaned out of his flat. He was long gone out of it, and it was discovered and saved a lot of it. But we think he died around 1982 or so. But the thing about it is, the stuff is there now, and no one has a notion of who he was. So, to me, that's what I'm saying, my theory is that the thing itself should be looked at without too much of the person and person's involvement in it, or his history or anything. So I wrote this about it. Elegy for the Philadelphia Wireman. Died, we think, around 1982. Flat was left vacant for a couple of years, and cleaned out. His work was found by chance one trash night in a Philadelphia side street by someone who wasn't looking for it. Dead or moved away, the wireman left no forwarding address, just these 1,200 pieces made from discard, twisted, bent, persuaded to yield something of the soul they never had until his hands pressed down on them and woke it. Skeletal umbrellas, batteries, pens and nuts and bolts and wardrobe hangers, coils of red and black electric cable, reading skyward, gesturing despair or supplicating mercy. This the art, the making of the thing allowed to speak its heart without the artist intervening, and no photographs, no anecdotes, no long explanatory notes. This the art, the what remains behind, to be the sole begetter of itself, its poor creator gone to lead his own, bequeathing this the most valuable the artifact could ever hope for, absence of its maker, and the freedom to be beautiful despite his uglinesses, wise despite his crass stupidities, exemplar of the kindnesses he knew a lifetime, hopelessly locked up inside him, and could show out only in these tapestries and loops of interwoven wire, these nails, these coins, these watches, tools and jewellery bound by rubber bands and tape. And even then, could only show them out, only if we found them in that skip before the trash man took it. Even then, and only if we weren't looking for them. Only if we found them, just by chance. That poem is in this book here. Commercial coming up. The Census is the book of an anthology of poems delivered at the open mic in Dublin, at various open mics, there were various people, and it's on sale for €15, and I'm in it, so it would be really cool to know. This other one is in it as well, I read. I've got two poems, and this one is in it. Sometimes you have to be realistic about your writing, you know. It comes to an age and realise you're not going to win the Nobel Prize. So I was in Rome a few years ago, and outside the Termini is a big railway station in Rome, Termini. There are bookstalls, and they sell all sorts of old, really old stuff, and there was a pile of obviously self-published poetry books by this poet called Arcidio Baldani, and I don't know about it, it's rather like what the Philadelphia Wireman. Anyway, about a year later I was back there, and I went to Germany, and the same books are there. No one's bought any of them, so they're in a pile. They're a bit worn out because the rain has been out, so I really had to buy one. I bought one from H&M, that's where I was, about 50p. And the stuff in it, not bad stuff, really. Not bad at all, some very good stuff. A lot of it's well. Anyway, I said to myself, you know, what's this really in art? What's this name, Archivio, not much. So this is because the book says that that's the only term in Rome. And as far as Archivio Baldani, poet, they don't know who he is. But like, you know, I do know who he is. Down the road from Termini, the bookstores, and their ancient owners, husband out their days, such piles of old forgotten classics, mounds of dog-eared fascist magazines, such endless mouldering stacks of sad remainders of that literary past, where poets thought that poetry could save the world, then suffered through two wars that proved them wrong. This man has spread his paper on a batch of yellowed war reports. This woman smokes among her pornographic videos. And here the stall stands unattended while its owner steps across the road for coffee, but a friend has sidled in behind the bargain Petrarchs and Pasquales, in case I might intend to make a purchase. The HME advised the Poesia of Archivio Baldani, 1975. The 10th of the 300th autograph, with letters of reply from notables, including Perugia's bishop, thanking but declining comments since he is for churchman and not critic, but pleased to find point ampi profondi. Where are you, my mirror image now, Archidio? Although I haven't fallen to such letters yet. A gravestone? Or just old into an apartment block with cat and kettle and long shelves of books you'll never read again. I never met you, but I think I know you well. Your verse is yearned for permanence, that charlatan. Your face of flux, that tyrant. Every night you bolt your windows to the noisy world that rushes past you. Fast as that few years when Mussolini led you to believe that things would change. Speeches heaped up in these bookstores here in quantities as vast as his ambition and as unread as our poems at Chigio. And look, here under tourist guides and atlases, an old anthology in bad repair with housing all the greats, Montale, Sava, house we call our often, you and I, unstoppable, our urge to recreate the world in words. I'm calling still. Still browsing in the bookstalls, sitting out the evening into night, and sometimes writing something like these lines for you, Archidio. No, for us. I would say a lot of people here write poetry. All the sessions I've gone to, most of the people in it write poetry. So who are the others? They are the people who come to support you. Your wife, your relatives, who've been lured along at a great night out and are sitting there wondering, what the hell is this? And, you know, friends who come along. So I don't want you to, but this is for them. This is for the people who come along to poetry readings, who actually aren't poets themselves. Know, and it's called His Despairing Friend. Everyone pities the poet. He's a bit daft in the head, given to thinking on things a bit too much, and moving around in the mornings, tackling the distance between the kettle and the teapot, like he'd set off to cross the Atlantic on a homemade raft. Or set up to check out the inside of the Titanic with a waterproof suit and a torch on one of their fancy robot cameras. But no use complaining. We have to put up with him because of the way he combs through the absolute rubbish we talk ourselves through every day. It's a dirty job. But poets have to do it. They're like those shantytown kids that live on the dollar they get for the metals and bottles they pick from the dumps on the edge of the city, and sometimes come up clutching something that might be valuable. Hey, we thought we lost that, but what do you know? But this just very occasionally. It's mostly having to sit long stretches on creaky chairs, extremely hard on the arse, and listen to him pontificating down on top of us and dressed.
That's it. We begin to ask ourselves, look over here. This is a desperate poet. Well, we could be at home watching Desperate Housewives. Or, I'm a celebrity. Get me out of here. All kinds of shrinking. Oh my God, it's terrible. Lord, hear my prayer. Get me out of here before death came. Still, as I said, it's no use complaining. He is our friend. And it's good to see him up over the mic in his hand, doing the thing he does best and no one but no one does better. Talking shite and making a freaking But that's okay. That's okay. Thanks be to God for the poets, I say. It could have been me up there. I'm going to finish up with something that is out of season. It's called Xmas Rap. And it's not only out of season, it's not a rap either. I'm 60 this year, but there's no retiring age on poetry. You remember that, you know? I'm going to be around for a long time. So I meet a lot of younger poets that can rap, and they're really good, and I'd like to be able to do it. I think I did this thing out, and it's not really, it's kind of a combination of a rap and something else. I'm not quite sure what it is. But it's called, now, the other thing about it is, now, love is about a day because the Christmas thing. I'll be wishing you a happy Christmas at the end, so you know. It's also a bit out of date because of the economic climate having changed. Changed overnight, you know. So it's called Xmas Rap 208, or a collage of Ireland in the early 21st century, just before the boom went bust. Okay, so I'm going to try and read this out now. Down O'Connell Street, and listening to the world, speaking on its language is a bit and not a word. Well, that's sad, but it can't be all bad that we're right bang smack at the centre of the universe at last. Did someone mention smack? Who? Where? How much? With our baseball caps turned backwards, and our mobile phones and our silicone tits and Viagra dicks and get behind me, Satan. Crack cocaine. And we're up to see your face, man, still. I'm dizzy how it is that we travelled up so quick from the shovel and the pig to the phoning for a pizza. Extra pepperoni on the side, please, and none of that poison pork. From a set of metal soldiers on a wind-up train to a miniature car and a video game, so how did we fall so fast? From the pocket of the Pope to the saddle of the Celtic Tiger. All those days of the showband Corpus Christi parade along the highways. All those days of the Kerry dances. Auntie, I come here often. All those days of the Piper's shoes, but forget all that, because 'tis the season of Nat King, no not good King Wenceslas, Nat King Cole, and good old Bing, to sing about the snow of Doe, with all this global warming, dude. I do have to say, we haven't had snow since I was knee-high to a Coca-Cola's auntie, but, come on, it's Xmas time, and wrap this in your face, man, and 'tis the season to be holy. High star thanks to Queen Vic Albert, brought us the Xmas tree. From the evergreen forest to high Germany, so we could brighten up a window, have somewhere for our Tesco light, cheap at the price, who'd be without them? A special thanks to the glow-nosed immigrant from way up north, that gave us something to sing about, yes, those jingle goddamn bells. Well, what was I saying? Oh, 'tis the season to be funny, in the Ireland of the Thousand Tongues, in the Ireland of Coronation Street, in the Ireland of the Premier League, and all those tunes for the tracksuit strip, and never mind the football, check out the gear, and maybe next year our boys in green will get the Nova volley from a supermarket trolley and qualify to make it to the back and the front of the tabloid pages. Yes, we've come a long way, still a way to go. We did get divorced, contraception too, and wrap it in your face, man, and Elton's candle in the wind for poor old I, the people's princess. Oh, how we cried that day, but still no sound cells yet, so why are we always the last? And what about our heroes and our martyrs gave up the quality time to fight and die for dear old Ireland, poor old Ireland, Ireland by the hooray. Look, is that the ghost of Padre Pearce in Sackville Street beside the spire? No, it's Ronald MacDonald. No, it's Padre Pearce. I never die, says he. Get up with the guy. Yes, standing in the CBO portico. Cherishing the children, novel idea at the time, right now. So, how did we arrive up here? Drinking Sauvignon Blanc, forget about beer, and, don't get me wrong, a supper river dance, website to, and even read the pages and the pages and the pages of the very latest off-screen, on-screen love of Roy Keane's dog when he's in town, if all this means that I don't have to do, like we used to have to do, with the TV stations, the close down at 10, and then the decades of the road, where you did see my decades, and the telling of our things to a man in the dark, through a hole in the wall, instead of like now, when I put in my pin, in the hole in the wall, and money comes out, 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 oh, what an economy, and... So say that the Kerry dances, oh, the ring of the Piper's tune, and wrap it in your face, man, go. Nothing safe in Ireland anymore. No, not a thing. And that's good. Way back then, everything was safer. Even human life. Oh, can you imagine how boring the headlines were? Man, horse, boy, fish, footballer, dog goes missing, wish you wish. So, come on. It's all like enough. Everything in the house. Where is he without Tesco? And it's Xmas time, and I don't care. Xmas time, and I don't care. The Christian Brothers said that we shouldn't put a next, but write out instead the word in full like Christians. Christians, show them the line. Or, the Catholic Tigers, I don't care. X marks the spot. X is where the Catholic Church suddenly got the chop, got the sipping of the hop somewhere in the shop mid-60s. Money can't buy me love yet, right. And now, at last, our nation's up to date with wrap it in your face, man. If we do something wrong, if they don't laugh, if we do something wrong, then we don't go to hell, we go to counselling instead. The witch affairs can't be worse. So, let's all sing it loud and clear. I'm walking in the air instead of a death daily. And what the hell was that? And no candle, no flowers, please. It's all cremation now. No prayers in this, a brand new Ireland. So, a clappy Xmas to you all, and a fornicatory new year, as if you needed any encouragement from me. Thank you.